So the last couple of weeks, Pastor Jeff has been taking us through the story of Joseph, and we have been comparing it to the life of Jesus and the parallels that are there. And we did cover some difficult topics. We talked about destiny and about betrayal and about hardship and challenges. And maybe as we've talked about these things and had a look at how Joseph dealt with these things and how he had experienced them, maybe God has also been working in your life in these areas. Today, we'll talk about what comes after these difficult times, as Joseph sees and reaches the light at the end of the tunnel. And hopefully you too will be able to see and experience the light. Today we'll be talking about success, and a form of biblical success, what the Bible tells us about success. So even if you haven't gone through difficult times recently, I would assume that you are pursuing some form of success. So today we'll have a look at what we can learn from Joseph about success and how we can reach it. And we will have a look at the glory that God can bring us despite difficulties on the way. And let me start by saying that I believe that the key to biblical success is being brought low. I think there is this necessity of being brought low first before God can bring us up high. And even though technically being brought low is on the opposite side than the top, it might be much closer than we think. And it might be even necessary in order to get there. Jeff talked last week about how many Christians in their times of hardship and challenges experience God the most during these times. But I also think that what the Bible teaches us that in order to get to a good place, in order to get to the top, we need first to be at the bottom. And before I'll talk more about that, let us first continue with the story of Joseph. So before I get to that part of today's passage, let me summarize the first part, because it's quite a long passage today. So basically, Joseph is in the prison, and he's sort of rotting in the cell. There's no end foreseeable, and he's just waiting for something to happen. And then one night, the Pharaoh has a dream, or two dreams, actually. And in the first dream, he sees seven fat cows, healthy-looking cows. And then all of a sudden, there come seven ugly cows, very skinny. And they start eating up the healthy-looking cows. And then in the second dream, he sees seven well-grown, big heads of grain. And then all of a sudden, there come seven very thin heads of grain, and they start eating up the healthy ones. And he wakes up in the morning and he wonders what these dreams could mean. And he starts asking all his magicians, sorcerers, all the people counseling him, and no one could really tell him what it meant. And I personally wonder whether they just admitted that they didn't know, or whether they made up a meaning and somehow the Pharaoh knew that that wasn't the truth. But either way, he wasn't convinced of their answers, so he kept on searching for the meaning behind it. And then all of a sudden, his cupbearer remembered that there was this man, Joseph, who back in prison, when the cupbearer was also in prison, had successfully interpreted a dream for him. And it actually came true. So he told that to the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh immediately wanted to see Joseph. And he explained his dreams to Joseph, and Joseph told him that while he didn't know the meaning, God did. And he basically told the Pharaoh what God has revealed to him. And he explained that both of the dreams have the same meaning, namely that for the next 7 years in the kingdom of Egypt, or the whole region, everything will grow in abundance. And then in the next 7 years after that, there will be a severe famine. And following that interpretation, he also gave an advice, and he said, because of the scenario, I would advise you to store up 1/5 of the harvest for the next 7 years so that then in the 7 years afterwards, you will have enough to feed your people. And the Pharaoh was really convinced that that was the true meaning, and he really liked Joseph's advice. So he was thinking of someone whom he could put in charge of that project. And then he himself said that he couldn't find anyone like this man, like Joseph, on whom the Spirit of God is. And then we'll get to the passage that I read now, verse 39. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there's no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." And then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger and put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command. And men shouted before him, "Make way!" Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one lift hand or foot in all Egypt." Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah, and gave him Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, to be his wife. And Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. Joseph's story didn't start at the bottom and then he reached the top here. Instead, it looked something more like that, and don't worry if you can't read all the details, but basically he started already quite high because he was the favorite child of a wealthy family. But then he was betrayed and he was thrown into slavery, basically. He was sold into slavery. And then from there, he worked his way up again, becoming the head of the household of his master's house. But then he was betrayed once again, thrown into prison, which is even lower than he was before as a slave. And now, in the passage that we've just read, we can see that in a matter of a few instances, his situation changes completely. And he becomes from really being at the most bottom to the second highest person in the whole country. And that is really he really fulfills this theme of making it all the way from the bottom to the top, which is a common theme in many stories, movies, or even real life examples. It's always attracting or catching to people if someone really makes it all the way from the very bottom to the top. And one example of these stories is the movie The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith. And it is based on a true story. And the story is about a man called Chris Gardner who, because of some failed investments, found himself in very difficult financial situations. And his wife left him because of that, and he even became homeless. So at some point, he was living on the streets with his little son, just barely surviving. But then, because of his determination and just his resilience and his motivation to never give up, and also because he was intellectually gifted, he slowly worked his way up. He took an unpaid internship, and over the course of time, he became a successful stockbroker. So he too fulfilled really this path of making it from the bottom to the top. Success is always attracting to people, but even more so if someone has come an even longer way because they've sort of started behind the norm, like even lower than most people do. And we see this parallel in both of these stories, at least at some point. Now I would like to also introduce a third person who also shares this common theme and even more extreme so than the first two. And it should come as no surprise given the sermon series, but it is Jesus. Because Jesus too, at some point, was at the very bottom. He was facing a whole crowd who requested his death. And he was humiliated and mocked, not only by the crowd, but by Roman soldiers, by the Jews, by almost everyone around him. And he did not only have to endure physical verbal abuse, but even also physical abuse. He had to suffer. And then he was crucified, which wasn't even a honorable way of death. It was a form of death set out for the most wicked criminals. And then while he was dying on that cross, he also in some form was left by God, his Father. And probably the most difficult thing about this is that he knew about all these things beforehand. So he knew about the pain, the suffering, and the shame that he had to go through. And we can only imagine how awful that must feel. But then over the course of a few weeks, his situation too changed drastically. And from being at this sort of low point, or very, very difficult point, he made probably the biggest career jump that the world has ever seen. Because he ascended to heaven, he defeated death, he ascended to heaven, and made it all the way to the right hand of God. And sitting there, he intercedes for all humanity, he rules over all the world, and one day he will come back to judge over all humanity. And he received the name that is above every name. And at that name, one day every knee will bow in heaven, on earth, and under the earth. There's no top higher than that. But the question is, what is the top for us? What should we strive for? What kind of success should we pursue? Because if we take a look at these examples, in Chris Gardner's example, it's somewhat obvious what his top seems to be like. It's this idea that many people in the world have, that some form of personal fulfillment through pursuing your passions and making them, turning them into a successful career. And at first glance, you could say that even Joseph's top seems to be similar, because he became very powerful and influential. He became the second highest ranking person in one of the largest empires at that time, Egypt. And now you could say that even Jesus' top could also be seen as a highly influential and successful position that he has reached, becoming not only the king of Egypt, but the king of the whole universe. But if we want to learn something from these examples, we must carefully assess what the top for them really meant like, what they were really striving for, and then apply that to what we should pursue. Is it really about, or was it for them really about status, responsibility, and hierarchy? Is that what these stories are trying to tell us? And I guess that you probably know the answer already. They don't. The Christian view on worldly success is a complex topic, and it has changed a lot throughout church history, because it is difficult to discern between what God can do and what God does do with worldly success, as we will see in the story of Joseph, how he uses it, but then also how it can be a very dangerous pitfall to Christians, as we can see, for example, in the story of Solomon. But I do believe that we as Christians should never actively strive, wish, or hope for worldly success. And we can see that also with Solomon and his sort of books of wisdom, the Proverbs, where he prayed to God probably before falling into the exact same pitfall that he was worried about. In Proverbs 30, we can read that, "Two things I ask of you, Lord, do not refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you, and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or I may become poor and steal, and so dishonor the name of my God." Solomon does ask for material things, but he only asked for so much that he would not be in poverty, only so much that he would have his daily bread. Because he realizes that everything more than that would bear more risk than it would do good. And I think that we should follow that example, to never ask or wish for more than just that. And of course it still remains difficult, because what is the equivalent to our daily bread? What is enough? And what should we do if we are being given more than that? But the detailed answers to this topic, to these questions, are for another topic, for another sermon. But today we'll rather take a look at the kind of biblical success that I think that we should all be pursuing, because it doesn't come with any dangers or pitfalls. Instead, it comes with the potential greatest reward of all, namely eternal companionship with our Father, with God. We can't ignore that Joseph did achieve great success and material wealth, but I firmly believe that for Joseph, his worldly success was a mere side effect that God was using for a greater purpose. But for Joseph, it wasn't what he strived for. Instead, I think he strived for three main things, namely knowing God, glorifying God, and being known by God. In the passage we've just read from Solomon, Solomon writes that if he has too much material wealth, he will ask, who is the Lord? In other words, he will have forgotten about the Lord. He won't know him anymore. Knowing in the Bible is much more than just knowing information or facts about something or someone. It is about experience and relationship. Joseph wanted to experience God. He wanted to deepen his relationship with God. And he wanted to be with God. Whatever situation he was in, whether positive or negative, his first thought always belonged to God. He wanted to share everything with him. And that is knowing God. But then not only did he want to share everything with God, but he also wanted to do everything for God. He wanted that his actions and his doings would please God and bring him glory. To glorify God means to reveal his character, his greatness, by your own actions. And that is what Joseph was all about. Striving for success, worldly success, would mean that he would have wanted to glorify himself. But instead, he was doing everything for God, showing that he wanted to glorify him. And the third, being known by God, Joseph did not only know God, but more importantly, he was known by God. In today's passage, it says that the Spirit of God is on Joseph. Joseph's allegiance with God is not just a one-way street. He was known by God, and he was blessed by his Spirit. And because he fully acknowledged that and put his trust in that, he was also assured salvation. And he always reminded himself of that, and he always took great joy in the fact that he could be with God. It is that what kept him going, even when things got tough. Just this joy of being saved by God. So we can see in the story that Joseph didn't focus on making a political career. He focused on knowing God, on glorifying God, and on being known by God. And as he did so, the rest just presented itself to him. Both Jesus and Joseph pursued mainly these three things in whatever they did. They fully focused on them. They strived for them every day. And whatever happened to them, they just kept focusing on these three core principles. They didn't get distracted, and they didn't get caught up in the world, in worldly pleasures, or in making a great name out of themselves. All they did was simply to get to know more of God, to glorify him more, and to be known by him more. So Joseph's worldly success was not a result out of this. It wasn't because he did these things well that he had worldly success. His success was just a mere side effect that, as I've said before, God wanted to use for a greater purpose. But Joseph's real success was his faithfulness and his trust in the Lord and his willingness to serve him no matter what. So how would I define biblical success? I think biblical success is being in a position where you can do these three things the most. So the more you can do them, the more success you have. And these things are your success. They are the reward. So it's not, if you do these, something else will come as a result. But they are the real success. So the more you know God, the more success you have. And the more you glorify God, the more success you have. And the more that you're being known by him, the more that you enjoy your salvation in him, the more success you have. And the word success is probably a bit misleading, because usually it reminds us of a material or quantifiable achievement. But success simply means to accomplish an aim or a purpose. And these things, they should be our purpose, our aim. So reaching them, accomplishing them, would be a great success. And it is important to always remember that these things are not about numbers or outward actions, but rather about inward attitudes. So knowing God does not primarily mean that you should study all theology books that are out there, but rather that you focus on experiencing God in your daily life, and that you deepen your relationship with him. Likewise, glorifying God does not primarily mean that you should sign up for all ministry options possible, but rather that you consciously do everything for God, that you are trying to reveal his character with your actions in your daily life. And being known by God is not something that we can actively do. It comes from God, but we can receive it and we can take great joy in it and always remind us that we are saved because of it. So how can we get to the top? How can we get to these three principles? And I think once again, it's three things. It's relying on God instead of ourselves. It's boldly confessing the Lord. And it's being brought low before we can be brought high. As impressive as Joseph's story is, it wasn't self-produced. It wasn't because of him that he made it. There were many ifs in his story that if this hadn't happened, he wouldn't be there and he couldn't control them. If, for example, Joseph had not been sold to Potiphar but to someone else, he probably wouldn't have made it. Or if the Pharaoh had not had those dreams, Joseph probably wouldn't have made it. Or if the cupbearer had not remembered him, Joseph probably would not have made it. But with Joseph, we can read over and over again that he knew that, he acknowledged that, and the Lord was with him and gave favor in his sight. And that's why Joseph made it to where he did. It wasn't Joseph who achieved anything, but the Lord through him. And we can read so. It says that whatever Joseph did, the Lord made it succeed. And we can also read that Joseph acknowledges that, as he says, before he interprets the dreams to the Pharaoh, he says that it is not in me, but God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Joseph knew that without God, he would be incapable of doing anything great. And therefore, he fully trusted and relied on God's strength instead. And we should apply the same. Less of us and more of God. That is what relying on him really means. And the second point, Joseph was very bold when it came to confessing the Lord, when it came to talking about God. Because when he was brought to the Pharaoh, this must have not been easy. The Pharaoh back at that time, he considered himself as a god. People saw him as a god. So he probably didn't have much respect for the Christian God. But when Joseph came to him, he immediately talked only about his God. And he says that it will be God who will reveal the answers to the Pharaoh. And then as he talks about how the future will be, he says that God has revealed to Pharaoh what he, God, is about to do. So not only does he declare that God knows the future, but he also says that God is the one in control of the future. He's the one who will execute it. And then he also says the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. And we can see that Joseph succeeded in confessing God's greatness, because then at the end, the Pharaoh himself says or acknowledges that it must have been the true God who has made all that known to Joseph, which is also why he put him in that position. And then lastly, the point that I mentioned in the beginning, the necessity of being brought low. We've learned both from Joseph's and Jesus' story that being brought low may not be so bad after all. In the well-known and one of my favorite passages in Philippians 2, we can read about Jesus' suffering, his humility, and his obedience to God. And then, before it comes to this praise part, it says, therefore, God has highly exalted him. So it's not despite the fact that Jesus was brought low, but because of it. It was necessary. It was a necessary step to get to this place where he would be exalted and where he would get this name that is above every name. When Joseph was brought low, it was all part of God's divine plan to later on redeem Joseph's family. When Jesus was brought low, it was all part of God's divine plan to redeem all humanity. When it comes to us, we also must be brought low in order to be redeemed. And for many, that means going through actual hardship. But for everyone, that means to have our old self die so that our new self can live. As Paul writes in Galatians 2, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. So that, I think, is the secret to biblical success. We must bring ourselves low so that we then can be brought high by God. And for some, that happens through external factors, meaning they are just facing difficult situations in their lives. And for some, it requires more own doing, humbling ourselves. But in any case, the motto is the same. We must decrease so that Jesus can increase. So Joseph went from a fairly high position in life, becoming a slave, working his way up again, becoming in charge of the household, being thrown into prison, until then finally God redeemed him and made him the second highest ranking person in the country. Now if we take this story and sort of symbolically apply it to our spiritual journey with God, where would you place yourself? Maybe you were raised Christian, always in a good state, never had any major downfalls or struggles. Or maybe you find yourself to be currently a slave or even a prisoner to something, a sin or something difficult in your life. Or maybe you find yourself slowly crawling out of slavehood or prisonhood, working your way up again to a good relationship with God. Or maybe you're at the best state that you've ever been before. Or maybe you haven't even started your journey with God at all. No matter where you are on the journey, I would like to encourage you that if you want to succeed with God, and that means if you want to know him, if you want to glorify him, and if you want to be known by him, then you should always strive, first and foremost, for these principles in everything that you do. And the way that you can do so is by relying on God completely, by confessing his name boldly, and by acknowledging that you must be brought low before you can be brought high. And for some of you, this might seem like churched up language that you feel like you hear every week. But I feel like that's what Christianity is all about. Reminding ourselves over and over again of the same simple and yet unfathomable way that we are saved by Jesus. And then what we as Christians ought to do in response. The Bible contains great riches and of stories and teachings, but the core message behind it is always the name, is always the same: to know God, to glorify him, and to be known by him. Let me pray. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you so much that we can know you, and that we can glorify you, and that we can be known by you. Lord, I thank you that you are always with us, and that even if we go through difficult things or through hardships in our lives, we can trust that you will use it for your greater purpose, for your greater glory. And we thank you that as a result of these difficult times, we know that we can even be brought higher than before, that we can even be closer to you than ever before. Lord, I pray that you would always remind us of that again, that we need to be brought low so that we can be brought high with you. And I pray that as a result of that, we get to enjoy the salvation that we have in you and just being with you more and more. Lord, be with us in this upcoming week. Amen.